James McBride's novel, The Good Lord Bird, is just out in paper. It's the novel that won the National Book Award this year. It's kind of a historical road trip story, a fictional account of John Brown's famous raid on Harper's Ferry, told through the eyes of a young boy. John Brown was one of the most controversial Americans who ever lived. He was an abolitionist, a white man who believed slavery was wrong and that he himself was called to end it by raiding a federal arsenal.
Right. Harper's Ferry was where America made all of its major weapons. It made 100,000 guns there. And John Brown was the guy who decided to raid the ferry, take it over, steal he didn't want to steal 100,000 guns. He just wanted to steal like maybe 5,000 and fight a war against slavery, thinking that all the blacks would come to him. The bees would hive, as he said, and that they would start this war against slavery and make it so expensive and difficult for plantation owners that they would give up the institution. I mean, thinking back on it now, looking back at it now, it's actually not as crazy an idea as it sounds.
The raid didn't go well. His men were, a lot of them killed, and the rest rounded up, including him, and he was later executed. How was he regarded at the time?
He galvanized the abolitionists, and he panicked the slave owners. His raid on Harper's Ferry really sent America into a state of utter sheer panic. I'm sure it was the galvanizing event to begin the Civil War because John Brown was white and he had white men with him and he was organized and he was very eloquent in his defense of his position. And before he was hanged, he lived for 6 weeks. So he wrote letters to newspapers and editorials and he wrote letters to friends and he became, for the Northerners, he became just a gigantic hero. They worshipped him anyway because he was doing their dirty work. For Southerners, he was someone that they just despised.
Yeah, he was considered like a walking demon, the devil.
Yeah, well, we use that phrase to describe people today that we don't like. I think one people that people don't understand about slavery, one thing is that the stereotypical view of slavery where, you know, slaves were getting beat all the time and the masters were, you know, he was the stereotypical white man who's just, you know, get over here, you know. Yeah, there was that, but the web of relationships that existed during slavery was very complicated. Because you can love your master, and your master can love you. But you could also break your master. For example, you could poison his cow. I mean, that's one of the things they talked about after John Brown's raid. You know, a lot of the farms in the area, the masters were in a state of utter panic because the cows were dropping dead, the horses were being released from the pens. I mean, slaves didn't just sit around and take this kind of stuff. They did all kinds of subterfuge and all kinds of stuff. And you always had to watch them if you were the master. So the web of relationships that existed during slavery was very complicated, and you mix all that business in with identity, you get a cauldron of material that is just wonderful to work with.
This book is so much fun to read, largely because of this just unforgettable voice of your main character, Onion. I mean, maybe the best way to introduce him is to ask you to read a little bit from the book. Do you have your book with you?
I do indeed. I just happen to have it in my pocket.
Thank you.
All right, this is from chapter 1, page 1. I was born a colored man, and don't you forget it, but I lived as a colored woman for 17 years. My pa was a full-blooded Negro out of Osawatomie in Kansas Territory, north of Fort Scott, near Lawrence. Pa was a barber by trade, though that never gave him full satisfaction. Preaching the gospel was his main line. He saved souls one at a time, cutting hair at Dutch Henry's Tavern. Dutch Henry sat right near the Missouri border. It served as a kind of post office, courthouse, rumor mill, and gin house for Missouri rebels who come across the Kansas line to drink, throw cards, tell lies, frequent whores, and holler to the moon about colors taking over the world and the white man's constitutional rights being thrown in the outhouse by the Yankees and so forth. I paid no attention to their talk, for my aim in them days was to shine shoes while my pa cut hair and shove as much Johnny cake and ale down my little red lane as possible. But come spring, talk in Dutchess circled around a certain murderous white scoundrel named Old John Brown, a Yank from back east who'd come to Kansas Territory to stir up trouble with his gang of sons called the Potawatomi Rifles. To hear them tell it, Old John Brown and his murderous sons planned to deaden every man, woman, and child on the prairie. Old John Brown stole horses. Old John Brown burned homesteads. Old John Brown raped women and hacked off heads. Old John Brown done this, and Old John Brown done that, and why, by God, by the time they was done with him, Old John Brown sounded like the most onerous, murderous, low-down son of a gun you ever saw. And I resolved that if I was ever to run across him, why, by God, I would do him in myself. just on account of what he'd done or was gonna do to the good white people that I knowed.
How old is this boy at this time?
Onion Shackelford is 10 years old when this happens. He's 103 as he tells the story.
And of course, with an introduction like that, you just know old John Brown's going to show up. And what happens then?
The thing goes bad. John Brown shows up, and he shows up in disguise, and they figure out who he is, and everyone draws their medal. And John Brown draws his rifle, and the shots are fired. The kid's father, Onion's father, is killed, and John Brown snatches Onion and takes him off thinking he's a girl because Onion is dressed like slave boys dressed in those days with a potato sack, and his hair is all wild and woolly. And John Brown just thinks he's a girl, and Onion's so scared of this crazy white man that he just decides to just keep being a girl. And so this kid stays with John Brown through the Kansas Wars, all the way to Harper's Ferry.
Where did you find that voice of your narrator? Onion, he's got elements of Huck Finn and... I don't know, I kept thinking of the narrator, the girl in True Grit, but it's a very distinctive voice.
Well, I grew up in a house where the old black folks in my house talked like that. My godfather talked like that, my stepfather did, my uncles. Mm-hmm. So I've always been real attracted to that kind of language. I remember when I was going to college, I went to Oberlin. I didn't think I was going to make it. I wrote my godfather a letter and said I wanted to come home, and he wrote me a letter back. And the letter was very short, but I remember he wrote, "I know you can do it," and he spelled no, N-O. And something that just touched my heart. Even for the rest of my life, I still remember his determination to make me stay in school, you know, because he didn't get the kind of education that I got based on, you know, people before me. You know, people without formal education, especially in the South, they just have a directness to their talk. And I still spend a lot of time with those people. I mean, like those people, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't spend a lot of time with writers and artists, you know. I'll put it this way. When I won the National Book Award, my phone was ringing so much that I just turned it off and I went to visit a friend of mine who has a junkyard. He deals mostly in tires. And I spent part of the day towing cars with him because he pulls cars out of ditches and stuff. And he doesn't read that much, you know. He's like a Tea Party guy, and, you know, he hates Obama and all. But he's a good friend. And I just had a great day. And I learned something, because I'm interested in welding. And he's a great welder, you know.
So it's interesting that within the last couple of years, we had Quentin Tarantino's movie, Django Unchained, and 12 Years a Slave. What do you think of those movies?
I don't really like movies like that too much, to be honest with you.
Movies
like... that's why I wrote this book. Well, you know, I mean, I read 12 Years a Slave, and I know the story. And the depravity of that situation for that poor fellow is something that I know a lot about. I'm trying to get to a different kind of way of talking about slavery.
Which is?
Well, first of all, most white people didn't own slaves. Slavery was the institution. It was kind of like the institution, like, I don't know, like the railroad, like the Amtrak that runs between New York and Florida. I mean, it was there, but most people didn't use it. I mean, most white people, their ambiguity about slavery began to grow and grow by 1850, 1855, the institution had become so troublesome that a lot of white folks just wanted to get rid of it. Most white folks who owned slaves, they owned two or three. And so they had a real close relationship with their slaves, which meant that they weren't slaves. They were more like bondage, in bondage. And there was a lot they could do and did do to influence how their masters dealt with them. When you come at it from that perspective, it humanizes a part of slavery that most of us never really deal with, which is the slave, him or herself, and the master, him or herself. And we're not talking about the evil mistress and the evil master. We're talking about the people who were just trying to make it and what their problems were.
It sounds like part of what you're saying is that it's a terrible disservice to portray the slaves just as victims. That's suggesting that they weren't smart enough to be considerably more than that.
That's absolutely correct. And it's also a terrible disservice to portray all white folks as complicit in the slave business and also too stupid to realize what was going on. It's a very complicated piece of business, and I think it's dangerous to present it as a kind of white-black kind of situation. It was white and black, but it was a lot more complicated than that. These people knew each other. They were sleeping together. They had all kinds of things going on. If you go into character deeply enough, you find these kinds of stories. But when you just deal with a stereotypical roots type of story, that doesn't really teach us anything. We know that part of it.
James McBride, talking about his novel The Good Lord Bird, which is just out in paper. It won the National Book Award this year, and there's a film in the works, starring Liev Schreiber and Jaden Smith. James McBride is a jazz musician as well as a writer, so to close this hour, here's one of his pieces from his CD, The Process.